Good morning. Progressive Democrats look for another big win, this time in the Wisconsin gubernatorial primary. The Associated Press explains how it could make for an unusual battle come November.
It would set up one of the sharpest contrasts imaginable in the general election between a MAGA Republican and a Democratic Socialist.
Why surveillance cameras popping up around the country are uniting opponents on the left and the right, and the archaeological wonder discovered near the Sicilian seabed. It's Tuesday, August 11th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shemita Basu. This is Apple News Today. An important gubernatorial primary gets decided in Wisconsin today, drawing to a close one of the more chaotic races this year, and once again highlighting the divisive internal ideological battles taking hold of the Democratic Party. In a swing state that President Trump won twice, one frontrunner has emerged, 37-year-old Democratic Socialist and State Representative Francesca Hong. She spoke at a rally in the state in the closing days of the campaign.
When people want to fight for something together, when they see something they believe in and they start to believe in one another, I think the Dems are going to have to write a new playbook here.
In what was initially a more crowded field, her rise has been helped along by the underperformance of two early frontrunners, both of whom withdrew amid alleged scandals. In a last-minute scramble to stop Hong, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley returned to a race that he'd already dropped out of due to a lack of support, this time with the backing of the state's governor, Tony Evers.
He jumped back into the race and suddenly made the argument that he needed to be the one that the more establishment mainstream Democrats need to get behind because Hong had been gaining momentum over the summer.
Scott Bauer covers Wisconsin politics for the Associated Press.
They look at Francesca Hong and they say that, yes, she was elected in Madison to represent the state legislature. Yes, she has a lot of progressives who are very much behind her campaign. But in Wisconsin, where 5 of the last 7 presidential elections have been decided by less than 1 percentage point, they really worry that someone that far left, that progressive, is really going to be able to win over the independent, moderate voters who are key in statewide elections here.
Hong has drawn criticism due to past comments she made on social media. She backed calls to defund the police and said Thanksgiving should be canceled, tweeting that it was, quote, celebrating colonialism. She's since disavowed those views, explaining her position in a recent CNN interview.
I always think my hospitality background in owning a restaurant for 7-8 years, that bringing folks around the table to share conversation and build community is always a good thing. But Thanksgiving is also a time that's incredibly painful for many people in our communities. And so I think there I wanted to make sure that people understood that there are multiple views, but views can evolve.
Hong has sought to turn her campaign to policies like taxing the wealthy and universal child care. And many progressive Democrats are feeling confident after Abdul El-Sayed won the Michigan Senate primary last week. But Bauer spoke to some voters in Wisconsin who found that Hong's self-label makes them a bit concerned about her viability.
I've spoken with voters myself, even here in Madison, who say, I really like her policies, I really like what she has to say, but I'm just uncomfortable with her identifying as a socialist. There is a history of socialism here in Wisconsin, but there is this unease among voters that even those who may support her platform, especially older voters, I think, are uncomfortable with that label.
And she hasn't managed to convince two of the biggest names in left-leaning circles, Independent Senator Bernie Sanders and Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Both declined to back her in interviews in recent days.
I met Francesca a couple of years ago. I was in Wisconsin, and she seems very, very nice. But again, this is a race I just am not that familiar with.
I haven't endorsed in that race. My focus has been in winning back the Congress.
Should Hong advance today, she will likely take on Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany, setting up a real contrast in a state that is often on a knife's edge electorally.
Tom Tiffany is a far-right Republican. He's very much a strong supporter of President Trump. He has alleged a wide array of election improprieties in the state that have not been able to be proven true. So if Hong would win on Tuesday, it would set up one of the sharpest contrasts imaginable in the general election between a far-right MAGA Republican and Tom Tiffany and a far-left Democratic Socialist in Francesca Hong.
In the past few years, a network of more than 120,000 AI-enabled cameras has sprung up across almost every state in the U.S. Police say that they've become a vital tool in tackling crime, but their high-tech surveillance powers have united a coalition of opponents on the left and the right. The cameras scan passing vehicles, tracking license plates from up to 75 feet away, and cross-referencing results with hot lists. And they can be integrated with tech that catches speeding motorists. The technology not only reads license plates, but can log your car's make, model, and identifying characteristics like dents and bumper stickers. Lisette Cruz is an assistant editor at Politico and has been following the backlash.
I think people have an issue with having somebody that they don't even know who has their location, their timestamps of where they are, how long they're there, where they're going. And I think that there's a sweet balance to strike between advocating for public safety and respecting people's privacy.
These cameras, known formally as automated license plate readers, are sold by a variety of companies. But Flock Safety has become the dominant player and is at the center of the controversy. Dozens of communities have canceled contracts. The Los Angeles Police Department has suspended its use. And organizers have even set up a website, DFlock, where people can alert each other to the camera locations. The debate over the cameras has been playing out in city halls and town meetings in states as diverse as New York, Connecticut, and Florida.
There's no reason that these people need to be taking our information on a daily basis.
This is being shoved down our throats, and I feel it should be definitely put to a vote. You had no right to do this to us.
I'm very disappointed that our conservative sheriff, or in this case, police chief, supports these systems as well. Conservatives are supposed to be patriots. We are the stewards of small, efficient government.
Cruz told us it's notable how opposition to the cameras has brought conservative and liberal people together.
I think that that's what's interesting about this issue, right, is that there isn't necessarily a difference in issues. I think it's just a matter of mass surveillance and data privacy issues. But I think at the end of the day, everybody just doesn't want to be watched all the time.
Some have raised concerns over how the data could be used by immigration enforcement. Flock says it doesn't work with ICE, though civil liberties groups say they could still ask local police for the information. Others point to a string of abuses. The Washington Post reports at least 50 law enforcement officers have been charged with misusing Flock cameras for unauthorized purposes, including to stalk women. Law enforcement agencies have credited them with providing critical leads in high-profile cases, like the man who plotted to assassinate President Trump on his golf course back in 2024. And the International Association of Chiefs of Police credits it with assisting with cases involving vehicle theft, armed robberies, and hit and runs. Some local officials are not backing down. Carmela Mantello, the mayor of Troy, New York, ran on a platform of public safety and recently pushed back at critics during a heated public meeting.
Your iPhone is more of a surveillance camera than the license plate readers. Body cams, which our community and Troy police wanted, and we are so grateful that we have them. They are more surveillance cameras.
Last year, Flock CEO Garrett Langley took aim at people dismantling his cameras and at the website that was set up to track his products in an interview with Forbes.
And then unfortunately, there's terroristic organizations like DFlock, whose primary motivation is chaos. They are closer to Antifa than they are anything else. And that, I think, is unfortunate because we don't want chaos, or I don't want chaos. I like law and order. I like a society that has a bedrock of safety.
In July, he apologized for those remarks. The fight against the cameras has also made it to Congress. Outgoing Republican Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky says that he is sponsoring legislation to withhold federal funding from cities that use Flock cameras. Cruz told us that a lot of the debate will continue as Flock signs up more and more municipalities. But she said people she spoke to still have serious questions as to whether or not the technology lives up to its promise and if the company is being truthful about its use.
These license plate readers can help communities, but I do think that there are real concerns on the other side of that that affect way more people than people are helped.
Extremely hot, dry, and windy conditions are fueling wildfires in the western U.S. and spreading hazardous smoke across the country. Nearly 200 new fires are thought to have started across the region since Saturday. Meanwhile, in Canada, new wildfires in British Columbia have scorched tens of thousands of acres and forced many thousands of people to flee. Both countries are maxing out their resources to fight the fires, so they're getting some help from allies. As Inside Climate News reporter Nick Cousins told us,
Australia and New Zealand are really valuable partners for the US and Canada because the fire seasons generally don't happen at the same time. So right now, there are firefighters from Australia and New Zealand, both in the US and in Canada.
And firefighters from Mexico recently joined the fight against the wildfires in British Columbia. The United States has shared resources during fire season for decades.
The US and Canada have been doing it since the 80s. But right now, the US, for example, has agreements with Canada, Australia and New Zealand, Mexico and Portugal to share resources, to share firefighters.
Wildfires today are burning more than twice as much land per year compared to 20 years ago. In the US, more acres have burned so far this year than all of 2025. Climate change means that more frequent, hot, dry, and windy conditions make fires easier to spread and harder to fight. Plus, Kuznets told us, fire seasons across the world are increasingly starting to happen at the same time, making it more difficult for countries to share resources when there are emergencies at home to address.
As that's happening, it's becoming harder and harder to share across borders. British Columbia and the Pacific Northwest right now are both having really bad fire seasons, but they're not able to share resources across those borders.
With resources stretched thin, experts told Kuznets that we need to reframe how we think about managing fires.
We do need more firefighters and planes and helicopters to try to suppress these fires that are threatening communities, but we also really need to learn to live with fire more. We need to learn to manage the landscape, to thin forests ahead of fires, to build our buildings in such a way that they are more resilient to fire so that we can let fires burn, because in a lot of ecosystems, fire is a natural part of the ecosystem. They need to burn. They will burn.
Here are a few other stories we're following today. A 7.4 magnitude earthquake struck Colombia yesterday, collapsing buildings in major cities. So far, it's led to more than 100 deaths, a number that's expected to rise. Colombia's new president, Abelardo de la Espriella, called for unwavering unity in the country and said his government would not yield or falter in the face of the crisis. The tremor was felt in the capital, Bogota, but the epicenter was in an underdeveloped part of western Colombia. The country sits at the intersection of several tectonic plates, making it prone to seismic activity. Since 1950, more than 3,500 people have died from earthquakes in Colombia. President Trump signed an executive order yesterday calling for cuts to the number of recommended childhood vaccines and other changes that would upend decades of federal guidance. One part of the plan would reduce the number of diseases covered in the childhood vaccine schedule from 18 to 11. And it also calls for breaking up the combined measles, mumps, rubella vaccine into three shots. Trump has claimed that the current administration of childhood vaccines has led to a rise in autism cases, something repeatedly dismissed by the country's leading public health bodies. According to the Washington Post, the immediate practical effects of the executive order are not clear, as states typically set vaccination requirements for kids attending school. Medical experts, healthcare organizations, and many politicians said that the order risked confusing doctors and parents. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy posted on X that vaccines were effective and that, quote, breaking up vaccines will mean children have to get more shots to get the same protection. And finally, it was sitting on the seabed near Sicily for more than 2,000 years, unbeknownst to the world until now. Divers recently discovered an ancient Roman shipwreck in what Italy's culture minister described as one of the most significant underwater archaeological discoveries in recent years. It was found about 150 feet below the surface and filled with loads of artifacts, including ancient clay jars used to transport wine and olive oil. Initially, a diver just thought it was a big rock, which goes to show you never really know what is waiting at the bottom of the ocean. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. A writer for The Atlantic explores why fewer people are finding love in the modern era. If you're listening to the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.